All right. Good morning. I want to welcome you to Mount Olive Church today, and so glad you joined us. We're in an Old Testament book, going through an Old Testament book called Ecclesiastes, and we've subtitled the series Meaning Less. And if you're brand new with us, we're so excited you're here. Hopefully it's not too confusing as we dive into this book of the Bible. There's a saying I learned a couple of years ago, and I think it's proven true quite often. You know the difference between in-laws and outlaws, right? Outlaws are wanted. In-laws, I guess, aren't wanted. Outlaws are wanted. So I actually learned this truth, that outlaws are wanted, a number of years ago in a moment of classic wisdom. And you know what wisdom is? Wisdom is this ability to look into the future, make decisions in the present so you don't destroy your future, but build a better future, right? That's what wisdom kind of is. It's kind of like hindsight that you get ahead of time, which is actually just foresight, right? So that's what wisdom was. And I learned this truth that, outlaws are wanted, in-laws not so much, in this classic moment of wisdom. We were on the lake with my in-laws, Mandy's side of the family, and I didn't grow up on the lake, so I didn't have the wisdom that you gain from, growing up around water. In fact, when I was growing up, I hated the lake and I hated water. I was terrified of water. So this is something I came to later in my life after Mandy and I started dating and got married. And so we were on the lake one day, this was a couple of years ago, so I'm already a little more familiar with the lake. And as you know, on the water, sometimes storms can come up very, very quickly. And we were having it was a beautiful day. We were on the lake, and there was a storm that started coming. So, in their wisdom, they're like, hey, we better make it back to shore early. And then they used wisdom. And they're like, Elvin, you stay on the boat, and we'll go get the truck and trailer and put it in the water, and then you can bring the boat. Well, in the 60 or so seconds between, them getting off the boat and getting the truck and trailer, the storm hit with a vengeance. And it was windy and it was pouring rain. And there was no possible way that we could get the boat onto the boat trailer because there was just way too much wind. And so then it was my job as the only guy left on the boat to sit out in the water in the lightning storm and the waves and my in-laws in their truck. Nice and dry, smiling and waving and giving me thumbs up as I'm trying to cover up from the storm, right? See, in that moment, I needed a shelter in the storm. I was already in the storm. I needed a shelter in the storm. What my in-laws had done is that they had a shelter from the storm. It was called wisdom. They're like, we're going to go sit in the truck and get the guy, the in-law to do that, right? Now, I got to say this. All the details of the story are 100% true. The intentions of their hearts, not so true. I think my in-laws like me a lot. I like them a lot anyways. And so I don't think they were doing it on purpose. But it was a moment of wisdom where they saw something coming. And sometimes when we don't use wisdom, we need a shelter in the middle of the storm because our lack of wisdom has walked us right into a storm. And wisdom works this way. It can be a shelter from the painful experiences of our future as we make decisions, wise decisions in our present. Their teacher in the book of Ecclesiastes says this about wisdom. He says, wisdom, like an inheritance, is a good thing, and it's beneficial to those under the sun. We benefit living under the sun in this temporary world. We benefit from wisdom. He goes on to say, wisdom is a shelter as money is a shelter. But the advantage of knowledge is this: wisdom preserves those who have it. Wisdom is this shelter from difficulty and pain and trouble in the future if we apply it. Now, wisdom literature, and we're going to look at Ecclesiastes chapter 7 today. So if you have your Bibles, go to Ecclesiastes chapter 7. Wisdom literature often bounces around a little bit. So as we dive into this, you're going to be like, man, the teacher's kind of jumping from theme to theme. And that's kind of how wisdom literature works. So it might feel like you're getting about 8 messages today, okay? But this is how wisdom literature works. And we're going to dive into this idea of wisdom. Now, in wisdom literature, like Proverbs, the writer of Proverbs describes kind of a number of different people, but I'm going to kind of categorize it into three different people. He says, there's wise people, and there's fools, and then there's the people in the between. Now, about wise people, just to give us some context about what it looks like to live wisely, Proverbs says the wise are those who apply knowledge. They don't just have knowledge, they apply the knowledge they have. They're often labeled or spoken of as being prudent, which means they look ahead, right? Wise people look ahead. They see, oh, this decision's going to have these kinds of outcomes or affect my life this way. This is what wise people do. They're called prudent people. They're also called diligent, those who actually do something with the wisdom or the knowledge that they have received. Fools, on the other hand, are those who don't apply knowledge. They're often described as a mocker who is very prideful, and their pride leads to their fall. A mocker is someone who's like, I already know what's best, and so I'm just going to do what I already know. They're not willing. See, to learn, you have to have humility. To learn is to say, I don't know, and I am going to humble myself and learn something. The fool doesn't have humility. They're described as the mocker. They're often described as having folly, which means they're undisciplined. And lastly, they're sluggards. They're just kind of lazy. They aren't diligent, and they don't do anything with what they've been given. So we have kind of the two spectrums, right? We have wise, and we have fools, and then we have the people in the middle. And Proverbs, I love this, he used this descriptive words in wisdom literature in Proverbs, and he calls them the simple. And simple just means you don't know yet. You're ignorant, not because you want to be ignorant, that would be a fool. You're ignorant in the sense that you just haven't gotten the life experience or the knowledge yet. You just don't know. And you're at the crossroads as being the simple. And I often think of, like, you know, young people or teenagers as being simple because sometimes they haven't learned everything yet, but they're on the way. And so they're at the crossroads. Are they going to live into wisdom? Are they going to live into foolishness? But all of us in some area of our life are simple, right? We don't know all things. And so we're always at a crossroads as simple people. And which pathway are we going to take? They just don't know yet, but they can learn. Well, as the teacher in Ecclesiastes speaks about wisdom, what he's going to do is he's going to give us wisdom unsugarcoated. He's going to say, here's what wisdom is, and here's some of the benefits that you can have from wisdom. But he's not overly optimistic about wisdom either. He's this is like real talk on wisdom. He's like, here's how wisdom will help you, but here's the reality. Wisdom has its limits. So he's not overly optimistic. He's not overly pessimistic. He's just, here's wisdom unsugarcoated. Here's what it can do, but here's its limits. Here's what it can't do. And then in wisdom, he says, now armed with the right perspective of wisdom, it does some things, it can't do some things. Here's how to use wisdom properly. So it's going to be all about wisdom. So if you have your Bibles, again, to Ecclesiastes chapter 7, starting in verse 1. Here he starts with just giving us some wisdom. And again, you might feel like it bounces a bit, but here's what he says. A good name is better than fine perfume. Now, when he's talking about a good name, he does not talk about a name like we think of a name. Like, I think my parents just gave me a good name, like Elvin. That's a good, strong name, right? And some of you are like, Elvin's kind of weird. I know, it is probably a bit of a weird name, but he's not talking about a name that way. See, in ancient times, in ancient Israel, a name was often descriptive of the person. It reflected their character. So what the teacher is saying, because character flows from reputation, your name, which is based on your character, if you have a good name, that's based on your reputation. You've obviously been living wisely. And in this way, because of the depth of character, a good name is better than fine perfume. And the day of death is better than the day of birth. It is better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for death is the destiny of everyone. The living should take this to heart. Now, how is the day of death better than the day of birth? I think logically speaking, what the teacher is saying is this. If you have never been born, you don't know that life exists. Right? Logically speaking, if you've never been born, you would never know that life exists. But once you've been born, if you live your life only knowing about your birth but not living in light of your death, you can waste your entire life living the foolish life. And in this way, the day of death is better, because once we're born, if we don't live in light of our end, we could waste the years and the gift of life that God has given us. See, we are to live with the end in mind, because when we live with the end in mind, we gain a heart of wisdom. So in this way, the day of death is better than the day of birth, because when we live, when we have birth, if we were to live without understanding our end, we could waste the entire life we've been giving. He goes on. Frustration is better than laughter, because a sad face is good for the heart. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools in the house of pleasure. So again, this seems counterintuitive, but I think, this is my thought, I think what the teacher is saying is this: frustration is better than laughter, and sadness is good, because here's the reality. You don't know how high the mountain is until you know how deep the valley is. You don't have an experience of the joy of goodness until you experience the pain of loss. They go hand in hand. If you only lived on the mountaintop and that's all you knew, you would think the mountaintop was a plateau. It wouldn't be any, there wouldn't be anything there. And likewise, what the teacher is saying is, when we experience loss, like the saying goes, you don't know what you have until it's gone, you appreciate what you've been given. But if you try to push away difficulty and hardship, you never gain the character that is produced in the valley. Many of you know this. The best and most important lessons you've learned in your life are often through the most difficult seasons of your life. It's in the house of mourning, in the place of loss, in the place of difficulty, we often get the depth of character that carries us. In sport, I often, and it's often been said, you learn your best lessons not through the wins, but through the losses. That's where you grow. That's where you get depth of character and depth of life. And you can live a shallow life. You can just, you know, laugh it all away and live for pleasure and not experience, or say, give yourself to learn from the experiences of difficulty, but you'll never have the depth of character. And remember, a good name, going back to his character, is better than fine perfume. Jesus actually speaks of this in light of himself. In the Sermon on the Mount, he says this: blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. You will experience comfort in the kingdom when God, through the person of Jesus, makes all things right. But it's in the house of mourning that we also get the experience and pleasure of being comforted by Jesus. Well, the teacher goes on, it is better to heed the rebuke of a wise person than to listen to the song of fools. Going back to what he said earlier, right? The fool just lives with laughter and lives for pleasure, but it's good to hear, better to hear the rebuke of a wise person. And then he goes on, like the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of fools. This too is meaningless. And remember, meaningless is the Hebrew word hevel, which doesn't mean without purpose. It just means it's like a vapor. It's like trying to grab and control something you can't grab and control. It's like this enigma. You thought it was going to be something, but it didn't produce what you thought it might produce. And so the teacher says it's better to heed the rebuke, which is going to be painful and difficult. It's better to heed the rebuke and go through that pain of a wise person than to simply live as though you already know it all. The deep life of character is better than the shallow one of superficiality. That's what he's getting at. There's going to be hard things in life, even a rebuke, even the place of mourning and loss. But as we live and embrace those things and have the humility of a wise person to learn, we can grow in depth of character. Depth of character. He goes on, speaking about this depth of character. Extortion turns a wise person into a fool, and a bribe corrupts the heart. Again, it might work out in the short term, right? If you bribe someone or extortion, it works out in the here and now, but long term, you live in that kind of way, it will hurt you and it will destroy others. It is the painful life. It is not the wise life. In fact, he just speaks about how this works out in the short term next. He says, the end of a matter is better than its beginning. So just because it worked out in the here and now doesn't mean it's right or that it's wise. The end of a matter is better than its beginning, and patience is better than pride. So do not be quickly provoked in your spirit, for anger resides in the laps of fools. Again, it feels good in the moment, but the end of the matter is better than the beginning. And James, the half-brother of Jesus, in James chapter 1, verse 19 says, be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. It's not that anger is bad. Scripture does not say anger is bad, but uncontrolled anger. Remember, the fruit of the Spirit, Galatians chapter 5, is self-control. Controlled anger, thought through anger, right anger, righteous anger is good, but don't be quickly provoked, because those who fly off the handle at every little thing are living in the pathway of the fool. The teacher goes on and gives us more wisdom. He says, do not say, why were the old days better than these? For it is not wise to ask such questions. You know, I think this is so wise. I think for us as humans, we have a tendency to look at the past through rose-colored glasses. And I think in some ways this is a gift of God. There's some hard things we go through, but we don't often re-experience all the pain when we think of the memory of the past. I think of tree planting, for example. I planted trees. I know in the moment I did not enjoy tree planting a whole lot, but even some of the worst days of tree planting, like being stuck on the side of a mountain in 3-degree weather, pouring rain, and feeling like every bone in my body was going to shatter from being so cold. I think of that moment, not with all the pain. I remember the pain, but I can't feel it anymore. But it's almost like I laugh about it now. Like, remember that time I was on the side of a mountain? Yeah, like, we tend to look at the past through rose-colored glasses. And even the good experiences, even though in the middle of our good experience, it was tied with pain, we forget about the pain, we just remember the goodness of it. And it's easy as we get older to look at the past through rose-colored glasses and to say, remember the good old days, which isn't bad to say, it's good to remember them. But if we think that the old days were better than these, then we are going to be bound to live the uncontented life. See, to live in the used-to-be's, remember the used-to-be's, if only it was like it used to be, we will be bound to live an uncontented life. Because God has called us to live in the now, in the present, to embrace it. We can remember the good old days, but to wish they were still here, we'll be bound to miss the goodness and the gift of life that he's given us now. Wisdom, like an inheritance. Now he summarizes, this is where we started the message, right? Wisdom, like an inheritance, is a good thing, and it benefits those who see the sun. Wisdom is a shelter, as money is a shelter, but the advantage of knowledge is this: wisdom preserves those who have it. So here we get some of the benefits of wisdom, and the teacher is inviting us, don't give yourself to anger. Seek a deep character kind of life, but you're going to go through some hard things to gain that character. Embrace difficulty as you learn from it. Embrace rebuke from a wise person. You can learn from it. There's so much wisdom he's given us in building depth of character, living for the end of the matter rather than just what feels good at the beginning. But now the teacher's gonna change course a little bit. He's gonna say, okay, so here's some of the benefits of wisdom. It preserves those who have it, but here's its limits. Remember, he's real talk. Wisdom unsugarcoated. He says this: consider what God has done. Who can straighten what he has made crooked? Can any of us? He goes on. When times are good, be happy. But when times are bad, consider this: God has made the one as well as the other. Therefore, Since God has made the one as well as the other, no one can discover anything about their future. And here's one of the limits of wisdom. Although wisdom, as we've already seen, has the ability to look at the future with hindsight, which is foresight, to make wiser decisions for a better future. The reality of wisdom under the heavens is this. We aren't God and we can't know everything. And even with wisdom, we cannot control all outcomes. Who can straighten what God has made crooked? Sometimes God gives us good and sometimes we get bad. We accept them both. Wow, but I lived with wisdom. Why can't, it should always play out one way. No, no, there isn't a key to life to determine your future. There's a God in heaven above us and even higher than our wisdom. So the teacher says, consider what God has done. Who can straighten what he's made crooked? And when times are good, be happy. But when times are bad, consider this. God has made the one as well as the other. Therefore, no one can discover anything about their future. And then he describes one of the ways that we can't make, it's crooked in this life. We can't make sense of it. Here's one thing we can't make sense of. In this meaningless life of mine, remember, meaningless doesn't mean without purpose. Meaningless means it's short, it's transitory, it's like a vapor, you can't control it. In this hevel, meaningless life of mine, I have seen both of these. Here's what we can't understand. The righteous perishing in their righteousness and the wicked living long in their wickedness. It's the age-old question humanity has wrestled with. Why do bad things happen to good people? And why do the evil and bad people, why do they get to prosper? And it's a dilemma of life we can't figure out. It's a crooked thing we can't straighten. What he's saying is, even with your wisdom, add to that righteousness. Even if you lived with wisdom and righteousness, you can't use wisdom and righteousness as leverage to twist God's arm to get what you want. Because sometimes the righteous suffer and sometimes the wicked prosper. And we can't make sense of it. If there was a key to life, we could use it and then we would no longer need God. But that key does not exist on this side of eternity. So the teacher says, armed with a balanced view, wisdom is helpful, but you can't manipulate God with it. Righteousness is good, but you can't manipulate God with it. Armed with a balanced view, here's what he says, and this is confusing at first, but I'll try and explain it. Do not be over-righteous, neither be over-wise. Why destroy yourself? Do not be over-wicked, and do not be a fool. Why die before your time? Now, why would the teacher say, don't be overwise and don't be over-righteous? I mean, wisdom and righteousness are good values. If it's a good value, can you overdo it? Of course you can't, right? You should have a lot of wisdom and righteousness. What is he getting at? I think what he's getting at, and the context of what he's been saying is this. Don't use your righteousness and wisdom as leverage. Don't use it as a way to say, I will control my outcomes and what God is going to do in my life based on my righteousness. In fact, if we use righteousness that way, if we're overly righteous, we've actually just stepped into the pathway of fools who live with overweening pride as though they don't need God. When we live with the righteousness and wisdom as leverage, like God is going to do our bidding, suddenly now we're living as though we don't need God, and that's the pathway of the fool. So he says, don't do that. He goes on and says, rather, here's how you live with both in mind. It's good to grasp the one, but not let go of the other. Whoever fears God will avoid all extremes. And here's the key to how we live, not the key to control our future. Fear God, that even our wisdom is under the hand of God rather than as something to manipulate or leverage God to do our bidding. Put yourself and live under the fear of God. It goes on and speaks about wisdom again, bouncing a little bit again. Wisdom makes one wise person more powerful than 10 rulers in a city. This is just the benefit of wisdom. Indeed, There is no one on earth who is righteous, no one who does what is right and never sins. So here's the reality, back to two verses ago. Don't be over-righteous, because the reality is you're not all that righteous. The reality is none of us are righteous. And if we're being over-righteous in the sense of trying to do something to control God, we are the ones who are sinners. We are the ones who have fallen short of the perfect standard that God has. None of our righteousness can get there, but isn't this the good news of the gospel that was going to be brought to earth in the person of Jesus some thousand years after the writer of Ecclesiastes, the teacher, spoke this? That Jesus would come and he would take our sin and pay for it, and then exchange our sin for the righteousness of God through the person of Jesus. Fear God, put yourself under him, even as you live with wisdom. Well, the teacher goes on to give some more wisdom. Armed with enough humility to say that we're not all that good, we're sinners, he says this: do not pay attention to every word people say, or you may hear your servant cursing you, for you know in your heart, you're not very righteous heart, right? Because he just said we're all sinners. You know in your heart that many times you yourself have cursed others. I think this is so wise. And as he says, we're not all that righteous, we all sin. And now he says, because we live in a world where no one is righteous, don't get all tangled up in your own mind about what people say about you. Because people aren't all that righteous either. And you know that you've cursed others and you've slandered others and you've gossiped about others. So if you're going to pay attention to every word everyone says in a world of sin, you will constantly, your belt, you know, I heard this saying once, you know, someone who's easily offended, they wear their belt too high. It's like in boxing, if you hit below the belt, it's an offense. But if you wear your belt this high, everything's an offense. So you got to lower your belt. And this is what he's saying. In life, if you pay attention, you're just going to be all tied up in knots all the time because we live in an unrighteous world. I think this is the Apostle Paul in Colossians chapter 3 says, bear with one another and forgive any grievances. Don't just hold everyone to the standard. You can't even hold the standard. Lower your belt. In fact, it may be wrong what they did, but if you get all tied up in knots, your whole life will be tied up in knots. Lower your belt. Don't pay attention to every word. All this, so he kind of summarizes it now. All this I tested by wisdom, and I said, I am determined to be wise. But guess what? It was beyond him. This was beyond me. Whatever exists is far off and most profound, and who can discover it? And so I turned my mind to understand, to investigate, and to search out wisdom and the scheme of things as if there's a key to life, right? And to understand the stupidity of wickedness and the madness of folly. I just wanted to figure out the key to everything. There's no key. But wisdom's still better than stupidity. And so he says this next. I find more bitter than death a woman who's a snare, whose heart is a trap, and whose hands are chains. The man who pleases God will escape her, but the sinner she will ensnare. Now, Ecclesiastes, the teacher's a man. So he's writing from a male perspective, right? But this is true of both men and women. What he's speaking here about is sexual sin. He said, I find more bitter than death, lust, and the sin of sexual sin from the heart. Because it is destructive. It will destroy us even as we're living beings. It's the pathway of foolishness and folly. The wise and the one who pleases God, they will run from, in their wisdom and righteousness, they will run from that snare. In fact, another wise person who wrote a lot of wisdom literature is Job. In Job 31, he says this about lust and sexual sin. It is a fire, sexual sin, and lust. It is a fire that burns all the way to hell. It would wipe out everything I own. Sexual sin has the potential to destroy families, to destroy income, to destroy finances. It has so much power. And so he says, this isn't like, oh, I'm just going to play with a little bit of fire, but I won't get burned. He says, no, run from it. And if you're a young teenager and you haven't been exposed to sexual sin, you're simple, you're ignorant right now. And you have a decision to make. Are you going to listen and follow the pathway of the wise in Scripture? Or are you going to say, I just want to experience some and walk the pathway of a fool? You have a decision to make. And every time we turn on our computer and every time we go out in public and our eyes see something, we have a decision to make. Are we going to go the pathway of the wise? Or are we going to go the pathway of the fool? It's a fire, not something to be played with. So he says, I find more bitter than death the woman who is a snare, the sexual temptation and sin, whose heart is a trap and whose hands are chains, the man who pleases God will escape. Righteousness and wisdom will take another path, but the sinner she will ensnare. So he summarizes all his teaching about wisdom up. He says, look, says the teacher, this is what I've discovered. Adding one thing to another to discover the scheme of things, if we can figure it all out, here's what I found. While I was still searching, but not finding, because I couldn't figure it out, I found one upright man among 1,000 and not one upright woman among them all. Now we can look at this and say, is he saying that men are more righteous than women? No, he hasn't figured anything out. All he's finding is there's not a whole lot of righteous people in the world, okay? Here's why. Here's what he says. This only have I found. Here's the point. God created mankind, men and women, upright, but they have gone in search of many schemes. God created us upright, but humanity has been seeking the scheme of wisdom to control outcomes, to know what God knows so that we no longer need God. And humanity has been doing this for centuries. In fact, the very first man and woman, if you go back to the Garden of Eden, why was the woman tempted? To eat the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And if you look in Genesis chapter 3, it says this about the woman. She saw the fruit and it was pleasing to the eye and secondly, and desirable for gaining what? Wisdom. The scheme of things. If she could know what God knows, she would no longer need God. So she took the fruit and ate it. And humanity, though created upright, have been searching for the scheme of things so that we would no longer need God. So he says, who is like the wise and who knows the explanation of things? If we haven't figured it out yet, hopefully we know none of us. None of us know the explanation of things. But here's the balance. Wisdom is still good. A person's wisdom brightens their face and changes its hard appearance. So even though there's not a key to unlock, to control our futures, wisdom is still the better pathway. So if we were to summarize what the teacher is telling us, I would summarize it this way. It's found in 2 verses, and I highlighted the words in verse 18 and 26. I'll read it and then I'll summarize it. It is a good thing to grasp the one and not let go of the other. Whoever, say it out loud, fears God will avoid all extremes. I think in summary what the teacher is telling us this. With all wisdom and knowledge and all our pursuit of it and the goodness of it, fear God. Secondly, verse 26, and I find more bitter than death the woman who is a snare, whose heart is a trap and whose hands are chains, the man who, say it out loud together, pleases God will escape her, but the sinner she will ensnare. What the teacher is telling us is this. Fear God and please God. Another way to say that is fear God and keep his commands. This is the summation of all of it. In fact, when we get to the end of the book, the author is going to zoom out of the entire book of Ecclesiastes in chapter 12, verse 13 and say, and here's the summarization of all. The duty of humanity is this: fear God and keep his commands. Fear God and keep his commands. So as we talk about wisdom and the benefits and limits of wisdom, how do we apply fear God and keep his commands? I think what the teacher has showed us is this. To fear God and keep his commands is live with righteousness and live with wisdom, but do it by faith. And this is so important. Live in righteousness. When God gives his law and gives his moral code, follow it. And when God gives us his wisdom, you should devour Proverbs and Ecclesiastes and the book of Job. We should devour wisdom and say, God, I want all of wisdom because it is a shelter from the storm. You'll probably end up missing a lot of storms. But do not use wisdom and righteousness. Do not use your righteousness and wisdom to control God or to force his hand, because that is not an act of faith. An act of faith is to say, God, I will follow you, but I will leave outcomes to you. God, I will live in righteousness, but I won't use my righteousness as leverage. God, I've been following you. Why have you let this hard thing come in my life? God, I lived in wisdom. You were supposed to do this. You and I believe, and I say this with a great deal of caution, but I think we show our hearts true posture as it relates to wisdom and righteousness when hard things come into our life. And when we blame God, saying, God, I don't deserve this because I live differently. In that moment, our heart has shown that we've been using our righteousness and our wisdom as leverage. And what the teacher says when we walk in faith is, when God gives you good days, rejoice. And when hard times come, accept them as well. Accept them as well. That's the life of faith. So who knows, or who is wise, and who knows the explanation of things? No one does. But it's still wise to live with wisdom. It brightens the face and changes the hard appearance. Live with righteousness and wisdom, but do it as an act of faith under God. Another way to say this, live by faith. God is the only shelter in the storm, and he's the only shelter from the storm. And I want to close by pointing us back to Jesus. Jesus said that the whole law and prophets he came to fulfill. All of it pointed to him. In 1 Corinthians chapter 1, we're told that Jesus is the wisdom of God. And in Romans chapter 5, that our, or second, sorry, 2 Corinthians chapter 5, 21, that our righteousness comes by faith in Jesus. True righteousness and true wisdom are bound up in the person that we're called to put our faith in. And as we put our faith and exercise our faith in Jesus, we'll trust him at his word, righteousness and wisdom. We'll follow his code, his moral commands, his ethical commands. We'll walk by wisdom, and we'll miss out on all kinds of storms that could have come our way, because wisdom is a shelter from the storm, but there's only one shelter in the middle of the storm, and that's the person of Jesus. And one day when we hit our greatest storm, which is death itself, Jesus, in the middle of our storm, will shelter us, because life itself comes from him. And death won't have the final say. So I don't know where you're at. Maybe you're brand new to church, or maybe it's been a while and you're like, I don't know about this whole God thing, and I'm trying to find the key to the good life. I want to tell you right now, wisdom is a key as we live in wisdom by faith in Jesus. But there's only one shelter in the storm. If you've never placed your faith in Jesus, I want to invite you today to place your life in him as the shelter from and the shelter in the storm. And maybe some of you, you know, you've been using wisdom and righteousness as a leverage. And today the call, even when life is hard, the call for you is, would you place your faith and live by faith in the God who is over it all, accepting the good and the hard? Let's pray. Father, thank you for your word that is wisdom for us. It leads us into good life. It leads us into the only life, which is found in you, Jesus, the one who came to pay for our sin and rose from the dead to give us life. Father, I pray that today each of us would be encouraged and challenged, whether it's in relation to wisdom or righteousness, or even as it relates to our perspective of you, that we would all be challenged to place our faith, our trust, our belief fully in you as we walk in fear and obedience to you. And we ask this in your name, Jesus. Amen. Thanks so much for joining us today. We trust you have been encouraged and challenged in your faith journey. If you're desiring prayer, want more information on our church, want to partner with us, or be involved in any way, please go to our website at mountoliveefc.com. We'll see you next time.